throughout the past year, I have done a decent amount of City Hall coverage, whether that be mainly the Burnaby City Hall and New Westminster City Hall. And every once in a while, there will be a City Hall meeting where something out of the ordinary is happening. And I would say this is definitely a City Hall meeting, which this case, there was certainly something interesting happening. And that is because back on January 28th, 2025, Burnaby's City Council meeting was actually interrupted by a local activist group called T-Rex Against TMX, who essentially awarded City Council with a Dinosaurs of 2025 award. And the award was given due to a closed-door agreement between Council and the Trans Mountain Corporation last September in 2024, which had the company paying the City of Burnaby $20.1 million over the next 21 years or so to improve the city's emergency response program. A lot of people took issue with that amount of money being given, especially because it made it seem as if they weren't allowed to critique the Trans Mountain Pipeline anymore. And for that reason, there was a protest that night, and it included lots of songs and dance and chanting, as well as people dressed up in dinosaur costumes. So that was a really fun piece to cover, but also one that obviously discusses a pretty serious issue and one that deserves seriousness outside of the dinosaur costumes and other things involved. So without further ado, here is that piece.
For going the way of the dinosaur. Having seen city after city burn, Lytton, Lahaina, Paradise, Fort McMurray, and now LA.
You're out of order here, and can I have staff from outside come in? We're going to recess the meeting, and we'll come back when you're finished. Thank you.
What you just heard was from a Burnaby City Council meeting on January 28, 2025, where Council and Mayor Mike Hurley was interrupted by local activists from T-Rex Against TMX and Mountain Protectors, two local environmental activist groups, who awarded Council with a Dinosaurs of 2025 award. This award was given due to a closed-door agreement between Council and the Trans Mountain Corporation last September. This agreement would have the Trans Mountain Corp pay the City of Burnaby $20.1 million over the next 21 years to improve the city's emergency response program. This agreement has been heavily criticized by local environmental activist groups due to the fact that the deal also bans the city and the Trans Mountain Corp from making any negative statements about one another, fact, opinion, or otherwise. However, while this was going on inside the council chambers of City Hall, right outside the building was a rally protesting the Trans Mountain Agreement, which included chants.
Show me what democracy looks like. This is what democracy looks like. Show me what emergency looks like. This is what emergency looks like. Show me what democracy looks like.
Music.
Fracking is. You won't be fracking long. You won't be fracking long. Wherever fracking threatens, we'll sing our fracking song.
And speeches from Indigenous elders, including Jim Layden, a land defender and Indigenous elder of the Coast Salish Watch House on Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby residents, a fire scientist, as well as nurses and doctors for the environment, all gave speeches during the rally. During many of these speeches, frustrations were expressed towards the council's agreement with Trans Mountain, and how they believed that the mayor and city council had been effectively gagged by the deal, not allowing them to speak on the environmental safety concerns associated with the TMX pipeline.
Kim the Dino. We did disrupt the proceedings in there. We asked for an amendment to the agenda. We had two people request to be on the agenda of the meeting and were denied. So we interrupted, we told them, what did we tell them, Dino? We told them, yeah, we said, look, you know, gagging your staff from speaking even facts about Trans Mountain is outrageous. And $20.1 million to pave the road for all of those children and young people at schools and at SFU to lose their lives in a massive fire is inexcusable. So we want them to do better. We want them to step away from this agreement, which they can do. It just means they don't get any more money, which is fine. They're only getting like
a trickle here and a trickle there. So,
near the rally's conclusion, RCMP arrested a member of T-Rex against TMX, who interrupted council proceedings later on in the meeting to state their concerns on the TMX pipeline and the council's agreement with the Transmountain Corp. Tara Shusterian, a resident representative of the Burnaby Environment Committee and an organizer for the rally, witnessed the arrest and had this to say about what occurred.
Well, end of the rally, it was an extraordinary, peaceful rally with a lot of, you know, choirs singing, people just singing protest songs. And, you know, people like nurses and doctors and, you know, fire experts coming and just giving us a lecture about, you know, what were the implications if there was a tank farm fire, and, you know, the health impacts, the, you know, evacuation, how we should do it. And it was absolutely a peace-loving, peaceful protest with just the dinosaurs dancing, and maybe one of the dinosaurs got a little exuberant and just went inside council chambers. But as I was telling your colleague, there are enough city security personnel inside the city, and they could have easily been escorted out by the city security. We did not have to get 3 RCMP officers brutally arrest this person, slam them against the the hood of the police car and then handcuff them like a ordinary, like a criminal. They're not a criminal. That's a peace-loving, young person inside that suit, which was just protesting, you know. So it's really a shame. I'm really ashamed of the way this whole thing has been handled by the city. And it just makes me very, very sad. And I think the citizens are going to look at this in, they're going to be really sad when they see something like this, an ordinary citizen. And yet you have rampant crime and nothing is done. And that's what I told the police officers also. Let's go arrest some criminals instead.
A day later, Police Corporal Mike Calange released a statement on the reasons for the arrest, which stated, on January 28, 2025, Burnaby RCMP frontline officers responded to a call for service at Burnaby City Hall in regards to a demonstration. When police attended, they noted a group of people outside City Hall peacefully singing and playing music. The people on site were listening to security direction. However, a short time later, one individual entered City Council chambers and was causing a disturbance by interrupting the meeting. The individual refused to leave and was arrested for causing a disturbance. She was transported to Burnaby RCMP cells. The individual was later released from Burnaby RCMP cells with no charges likely being forwarded. Once again, this statement comes from Police Corporal Mike Calange. On the night of the arrest, CJSF also attempted to receive comment from City Council on the incident. No comment was given. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. Once again, we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. That was a piece that I did last February on a protest about the TMX pipeline and a deal that was made between City Council and the Transmountain Corporation. Thank you all so much for tuning in so far this hour. We have about 21 minutes left, but thankfully all of this week and all of every week, but especially this week, we have so much amazing programming coming your way. You know, we've got Democracy Now! Coming up. We've got Raccoon City on its way, and if you are appreciative of the programming that we put out, whether it be the talk content, the news content, the sort of spoken word mix between music and talk content, then please donate to cjsf.ca/donate and put some money towards Speak Up or whatever your favorite show here at the station may be. You can also call us at 778-782-2573 to make a donation, or text that same number, 778-782-2573, and text the word donate, and you'll get set up with a donation link. Please, 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 every single bit of donation goes a long way, and we are so very appreciative of everyone who is on this journey with us, helping us rise higher and reach further. You know, whether that be in terms of the content we produce or literally our signal strength, because we are actually in the midst of a tower replacement project, one that is going to require a lot of resources. And, you know, with that tower replacement project, our actual FM signal will be able to rise higher and reach further to all of you listening right now, whether that be in your car, in your home, wherever you listen to FM radio, you'll be able to hear us a lot clearer, and your donations really help make that possible. Coming up next, by the way, on this very special Fun Drive episode of Speak Up is an interview that I did earlier this year, back in June. This was an interview I did with the Slable Tooth Nation. Lost my train of thought there. This is an interview I did with the Slable Tooth Nation, specifically their work that they did in partnership with the Kelp Rescue Initiative on bull kelp restoration in North Vancouver at Cates Park and New Brighton Park, and sort of all the success that that was able to amass, essentially. I was able to speak with their Treaty Lands and Resources Department, specifically Michelle George, who is the Tsleil Waututh Nation's cultural and technical specialist. One reason why I really love this interview is because I was really wanting to speak with her about this specific topic. I really wanted to gain more insight on what it represented and, you know, what it even means to, you know, bring back kelp and sort of the benefits that provides, not only environmentally, but culturally as well. And finally, when I was able to interview Michelle George, I was on a BC ferry, and I really loved that I was able to still speak with her, still get a good connection, first of all, and have this piece come to fruition all through my hotspot on a BC ferry. So without further ado, here is my interview with Michelle George of the Tsleil Waututh Nation on their bull kelp restoration project. This is Danny Nesvedarani, community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Since 2023, the Tsleil Waututh Nation worked in partnership with the Kelp Rescue Initiative on bull kelp restoration in North Vancouver at Cates Park and New Brighton Park. Kelp forests in the Burrard Inlet have been facing rising ocean temperatures that have led to declines in kelp forests in the Salish Sea and around the world. According to the nation's Treaty, Lands, and Resources Department, even though there are groups focused on kelp restoration in British Columbia, there is no current standard bull kelp restoration method being applied across the region. The nation wanted to address this by developing strategies that can be successful in the Burrard Inlet to work against these declines and to motivate local industry to aid in bull kelp restoration efforts. To learn more about the impacts of this kelp restoration, we sat down for a conversation with Michelle George, Tsleil Waututh Nation's cultural and technical specialist, where we were able to gain some insight on the effects this restoration project has had on the nation's underwater ecosystems since 2023. Please take a listen.
Tsleil Waututh has been doing restoration projects for over the last 30 years, and it's a part of our initiative to clean up the waterways and surrounding lands. And so we've done restoration projects in estuaries and stuff, and we've been focusing on kelp and eelgrass. And specifically, this kelp project is sort of the first of its kind for us. So we're learning the process, how to harvest kelp from other areas, how to transplant it into new areas that aren't growing it, And it's sort of also a learning process for us. The methods for transplanting include securing kelp onto ceramic plates, to put it simply, and then putting those on the seabed and hoping that they flower and seed new bull kelp. And that's a really high level, non-technical overview of the project.
Thank you. I think that does a good job of summarizing it all. Aside from the restoration aspect of the project, I wanted to know if there was also an educational part as well, particularly with the youth of the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, regarding the history and the importance of kelp within these ecosystems.
So Tsleil-Waututh have used Burrard Inlet since time out of mind. And so we used it for transportation, cultural activities, and food. And then up until 1792, we used it freely and every day. Unfortunately, after contact, that changed. And a lot of other industrial colonizing practices changed the way that we use the waterways. And so because of the pollution and devastation, some of our members don't access the waterways as they once did, or understand some of the resources that we used to harvest from the waterways. So a part of that is bringing community, specifically our school kids, out to these restoration areas and having them participate in these projects. Not specifically related to kelp, but we did have our students out there tying eelgrass to washers to sink them into the other projects that we've done. And so their hands-on approach, not only did they actually get to learn about the bull kelp and other kelps, traditional practices, traditional uses, and then also getting them out on the land with elders and other knowledge holders so that there's cultural exchange and education going on as well. So scientifically, but then also culturally, they're learning from all levels of not only our employees, but elders and community members.
Another thing that I found really fascinating about this project had to do with how this kelp restoration is sort of working against certain current forces, whether that be the ongoing effects of colonization or how that connects to climate change, which is ever present. And I also know that this is not the first attempt with this restoration project. There was a previous attempt in a past year that wasn't as successful. How did the nation sort of adapt and change the strategies around the restoration project in order for it to become more of a success?
Well, I think doing a little of the monitoring, assessing where we put it, where we selected sites, and then knowing what kind of ecosystem kelp needs to flourish in. So having multiple sites is, in a way, beneficial and helps the production of it. And then having, in a sense, more options, different scenarios where it has a chance to succeed, and then understanding where it's not succeeding so that we don't replant there or waste attempts there.
And is there a specific site in particular where you're seeing the most success?
I believe our, out of the sites that we picked, I think New Brighton's one of the more successful sites.
Another thing I found really interesting about this project had to do with the various ways that kelp restoration can help these ecosystems. I was wondering if that's something you've been seeing and if that's something you can speak to.
The whole point of help and restoring the waterways is to help the forage fish. The forage fish are a major player within the food web, and is the herring. So in the 1860s, herring was completely harvested, exasperated from Burrard Inlet due to dynamite fishing. And it wasn't really known that it was such a huge part of Tsleil-Waututh diet that because it wasn't available for the last 100 years plus. And in the last 4 to 5 years, we've had a major herring return within Burrard Inlet. And I think that also attributes to the return of killer whales within Burrard Inlet as well. So herring and killer whales, which we haven't seen in decades, have started to return to Burrard Inlet.
So what you're saying is that the kelp restoration is helping with the local herring populations, which is in turn benefiting the local killer whales as well as other sea life.
I believe so.
Do you hope that this project is able to inspire other communities to adopt similar restoration practices?
Well, we do in Tsleil-Waututh in general, we have a lot of initiatives going on. We have water quality, we have restoration. We're doing a number of things, and I think we always put it back to the people that use the area. Are you doing your part, thinking about green energy, doing things differently, waste? And depending on how specific we want to get, it even goes into the way that you wash your clothes and the types of material that you use, because microplastics are a real thing. And what people don't know is that it comes from your laundry. So, understanding that a lot of things are really interconnected, and everybody has a little bit to participate in. And even when you go to a beach, understanding that it is an ecosystem and that walking in the tidal area could be effectively stomping on someone's home. When I refer to someone, I mean resources, wildlife, marine environment.
So just being more mindful of the role that we all play within this ecosystem and the ways that we can sort of equitably coexist.
Yes, exactly. We're all neighbors. We all sort of have to live together. So, yeah.
Once again, that was our conversation with Michelle George, Tsleil-Waututh Nation's cultural and technical specialist, who spoke with us about the success of the nation's bull kelp restoration project, including the observed benefits that it's provided for local sea life populations. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. All right. Thank you once again to Michelle George and the Tsleil-Waututh Nation for that interview on their bull kelp restoration project. This is Danny Nesvedarani with Speak Up only on CJSF 90.1 FM. And we only have about 7 minutes left, but I want to thank you all so much for tuning in this hour. And also to reiterate that it is Fund Drive this week. I've been saying it. And if you would like to donate to this show or any of your other favorite programs here at CJSF, you can go to cjsf.ca/donate, put some money towards your favorite show. You can also call us at 778-782-2573. That is 778-782-2573. You can also text that number and text us the word donate, and we'll send you a link to get all set up with that. Every little bit goes a long way, whether you want to donate $35, $70, $50, $100, every contribution counts, and it goes towards making sure that this station can rise higher and reach further. You know, one other amazing thing that happens here at the station is something called Studio Six, where we bring in a band similar to that of a Tiny Desk concert, and then us we record and edit a small, intimate performance that band does here at the radio station here at SFU Burnaby, here at the bottom floor of the Student Union building where we are located. And we then put it up on our YouTube channel, and it's been a really, really cool thing to witness, to contribute to. It's something that we're very open to having a lot of people contribute to. And, you know, one band that we had on somewhat recently goes by the name of Sour Dope, and we actually have a live recording. This one is titled Water Temple, and I think it really exemplifies just how cool it is to have all of these connections with all of these local groups. They're doing amazing things, and Studio 6 is just a great way to cultivate that, and not just cultivate it between us and whatever band or musician that we're working with, but also sharing it with all of you. You know, that is the number one MO here at the station, is doing a lot of really cool stuff, but then making sure that it gets shared with all of you, whether that's on our website, cjsf.ca, whether that's through the FM airwaves, whether that's through the website homepage where you can listen to old episodes of your favorite shows, whether that be Raccoon City, which is coming up, whether that be Typically Tuesdays, which had a killer fun drive show yesterday, or whether it be maybe Analog Archives, which I host on Thursday at 6 p.m. Regardless of what your favorite show is, your donation matters, and it truly, truly means the world to all of us here. I can very confidently and safely speak for everyone else at this station when I say that we are so eternally grateful for all the support that you provide. Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your host for Speak Up. Coming up right next is Democracy Now!, but before then, I'm going to be ending off with a song. This is Sour Dope, as I had mentioned, with Water Temple live.